Are you insane?
They are insane!
In the hands of an adolescent.
It is a cellular peptide cake.
Inaccurate. But Matt Frosting.
It does like you.
Mr. Kim.
Hi, Christopher. I'm Nero.
How you doing, Mike?
Here's Spock. Whoops!
We hold grudges, don't we? We find fault in things, we find fault in people, we find fault in story, and then we don't let go of it. And we keep it close to our heart as something that we are sure about, something we are sure it does not work, that we do not like that person, that thing, that story we do not like, and we hold it close to our heart as something we know, as a fact. And we hold it there because these are the things that make us who we are. We hold on to these grudges, these opinions, these sharp opinions. And they have to stand the test of time, don't they? Because if they don't, then does it rock you to your core, or is it just a misjudgment at the moment? That's my opening statement. I'm Mike McCafferty. I just want to talk about Star Trek. And we are winging our way, as Hermes does, as Mercury does, as Apollo does. Not Apollo, but I just wanted to throw him in there. To the premiere of Star Trek, Picard. It's January 17th, Friday, January 17th. For me, it's whatever time and date it is you want it to be for you. Who cares? But for me, that date is rapidly approaching, and one of the things that piqued my curiosity, and it must have piqued some other podcasters and YouTubers, because I just saw someone else talking about this very episode yesterday, harkens back to a pivotal and interesting moment in Star Trek Next Generation history. And it's because of the reemergence of this character who really wasn't on anyone's radar until we saw him in the trailer for Picard. And you probably know who I'm talking about. It's not Jonathan Frakes. It's not Will Riker. But instead, it is Hugh Borgman. That's not his last name, but christened by himself, I guess, and by Geordi and by Crusher. Hugh the Borg, third of five. And it instantly, seeing him, actually not even knowing who the hell he was, but when they told me, it's this guy who's going to be this, it instantly took me back to when I first saw that episode that he was in. And when it was finished, the first thing I thought was, they ruined the Borg. It's funny how even back then, on some level, I was certain that this was going to ruin one of my favorite villains of all time, even though that villain had only been revealed like two episodes earlier. And so as I saw that episode, or I saw this, this Hugh who's going to come back in Picard, I thought, you can certainly go back and we can look at all sorts of different episodes, to ramp up to Picard. But, it's 2020. We did it. We made it. We're here. And if you check out the Facebook page, I'm still posting all sorts of fun stuff. But I thought, let's dig into this episode. I, Borg, because I don't like it. And that's my uber opening of this. So this is going to be kind of a fairly quick one. There's nobody else here in my Fortress of Spiders, my echoey Fortress of Spiders. And I really haven't done the deepest of dives on these, so I'm just going to kind of roll through it and give some basic thoughts on it with some interesting conclusions, I believe. So let's talk about this. Let's talk about I, Borg. Fifth season, episode, what episode is this? I can't even tell you. Episode 23 of the fifth season. So we're in the cream of the crop right now. This is post, Best of Both Worlds, post Q Who, and really after the third season cliffhanger, and the world was set afire with the idea that they could lose Picard. The fourth season on really became kind of the golden era of the Next Generation. We all agree about that. We don't have any problems with that. I actually watched a couple of seventh season episodes with my son Kiernan today. One not as bad as I thought. One even worse. Emergence. Oh, terrible. So people generally say that the fourth, fifth, sixth seasons, you know, fourth and fifth season especially, then the third season are really, really strong. And fifth season, certainly, we are in just this golden period. Although Time Zero is coming up, and then we'll have Descent later on. But so here we are in towards the end of the fifth season, and aside from a few scant mentions, we have not had any Borg at all since The Best of Both Worlds, Part 1 and Part 2, Season 3 finale, Season 4 premiere. So really, we've gone about 45 to 47 episodes, I don't want to do the math on it, without really having anything to do with the Borg. Now, sometimes it'd be mentioned, and your heart would skip, like, oh, maybe there's going to be some Borg here. And then finally, we get some Borg. I watched the next time on Star Trek for this one, and I remembered how exciting it was going. Oh my God, the Borg, what's going to happen here? So this came out in 1992, May 11th, 1992. Let me pull up my notes here. The title I, comma Borg, although I guess in the original title was just I Borg, well before the iMac products, before Invisible Man, the show I was in, later on shortened to I-Man, but I Borg later became I, comma Borg. I guess it was in one of the titles of the script. So it's that's the actual punctuation. I, comma Borg is a play on Robert Graves' book. I'm reading this. I, Claudius. And it's also a play, which was a play. Actually, Isaac Asimov did a play on I, Claudius with I, Robot, which was a book, had a series of short stories about humans and robots and the three laws of robotics. And I'm pretty sure I read I, Robot. I know I read a couple of maybe Caves of Steel, but I really loved his. Isaac Asimov is a pretty dry writer. Let's just say that. This is a podcast about Star Trek. I promise you we'll get you there. But if you haven't read any Isaac Asimov, first of all, read Foundation, the Foundation trilogy. It's pretty good. And then maybe read one of the I, Robot series, because it's really, most of them are mysteries, like detective mysteries, and most of them circle around these three laws of robotics, which I think are robots can't hurt humans, robots can't allow humans to be hurt due to their inactions, and robots can allow themselves to be hurt as long as it doesn't interfere with the first two. Did I get that right? I'm not sure. Data is definitely a descendant of the idea of the three laws of robotics. And so in the Borg are sort of the mirror's reflection of that. They have no scruples in some ways, and all they want to do is hurt humans and assimilate them and turn them into themselves. So this title was sort of a play on words of that. Written by René Echeverria. I don't think I've ever pronounced that name, so I hope I got it right, who's a pretty good writer of Star Trek. I guess a couple of passes went through the hands of a couple other writers. It has the notable guest star of Jonathan Del Arco, who we will see in Picard very soon. And I didn't know this, but he was almost Wesley Crusher. He was auditioned for it and loved TOS, but didn't get the role, and as a result, refused to watch any of the episodes. And I fully agree with that. Sometimes if you don't get a role and you're that angry about it, good on you. You don't have to watch some other jackass playing your part. But when this role came up, they offered, or he auditioned for it, I guess. They didn't offer to him. He auditioned for it. And based on the fact that he was trying to make himself isolated from the rest of the auditioners, they found that to be exactly what they needed. He was cast as the part. All right, let's dig into a couple of the scenes here, first of all. I don't really have a large pretense for this. I'll wrap it up, but let's get into some of these scenes here. And the first, let's just start chronologically. This one is on. And as always, my why are we on the 2G net? We need to go to 5G. My God, we're going to need to go 5G. As always, my internet is a little slow out here. But I don't stop. I don't stop for nothing, man. This is like the train in emergence. Well, we skipped ahead, didn't we? All right, so let's go over here. So it starts off with them looking over this six-star cluster system, and then they get this distress call, the Enterprise, and they beam down, and it's a little scout ship with Borg. And this is on Planet Hell, the soundstage. It looks terrible, to be honest, in HD. I don't even know if it's an HD on Netflix, but it certainly isn't like the best looking, and you can totally see in the background that the mountains are just painted. They're just like these painted backdrops. And the Borg cube, I don't know how big it is, but it sort of looks like they just threw up some aluminum siding and just, you know, put some stuff on it, you know, some like Radio Shack stuff and painted it black, and then that was it. So they find the Borg, and Picard's more than happy to leave them there or to scavenge them up, but one of them's alive. And Beverly Crusher, who is on her high horse for this episode for sure, implores Picard to at least fix up this Borg. And so Picard eventually agrees. They bring him up there, and then we have this very interesting scene where he goes back into his ready room. It's like, if you have anything, you know, let me know. And then Deanna Troi comes in. And there's kind of a weird instance where he's kind of curt in the bridge, and he walks off, and Data kind of gives her a look like, hey, maybe you should check up on him. I don't know if that's what the intent of it was, but certainly it was interesting to see that. And then we get this little scene here.
Captain, I was wondering if there was anything you wanted to talk about.
I don't think so, Counselor.
I would have thought having a Borg on the ship would stir some feelings.
I'm quite recovered from my experience, thank you.
Sometimes, even when a victim has dealt with his assault, there are residual effects of the event that linger. You were treated violently by the Borg. Kidnapped, assaulted, mutilated.
Counselor, I very much appreciate your concern for me, but I can assure you it is quite misplaced. I have carefully considered the implications of having a Borg on this ship. I have weighed the possible risks. And I'm convinced that we are doing the right thing. Now, I am quite comfortable with my decision.
I see. Well, if at any point you want to talk more,
I shall certainly avail myself of your help.
All right, so I like this scene because looking back at it now, especially from 1992 to 2020, these are sort of the first instances of the idea of PTSD that, I mean, you know, George Carlin, I was digging into this a little deeper. I was looking at the idea because, you know, back they used to call it shell shock or, you know, what were some of the other terms for it or battle fatigue or things like that. But the idea that being through a traumatic event could have longer lasting effects than just the temporal moments that you were there. And I remember this certainly as Desert Storm was finishing up and people were coming back. And you know, after that, you know, in the 2000s, the idea that you could go off to war and you came back and it came back with you. And this is the first episode we really kind of dig back into this traumatic event that happened to Picard. One of the disservices of having a show which was just getting on its feet from season 3 to season 4 and was syndicated, which means that Paramount and the UPN network and all those people did not, I shouldn't say UPN network, but Paramount did not want to have a serialized storytelling, see Babylon 5 and Deep Space Nine for that, because people could just kind of check in and check out, is they didn't want to have their lead haunted by this incredibly traumatic event. And yet, And so they swept it under the rug with one additional episode, Family, which comes right after it, where he's sobbing and he fights his brother in the vineyards, and they're all muddy, and then they're fine, then they're singing, they're drunk, and blah, 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 and all is fine. This is a very 20th century tough guy, you know, rub some dirt on it and keep going. But we know differently, don't we? Here, 28 years later, we know differently that these scars do not heal as well as we want them to. And he killed 39,000 people, and he couldn't help it. He was physically assaulted. He was physically invaded. And he's being very, very British about this. And this is the first time we see him actually having a very strong opinion against the Borg. Yes, he allowed the Borg to be brought up there, but ultimately he wants to find a way to kill the rest of the Borg. So I do like this scene. I do like what it implies. And obviously we will be taking this and transporting it later on into First Contact, right? I mean, that will be kind of the necessary location we'll have to go to keep that going. So I like this scene. And sort of in First Contact, just like in First Contact, Picard kind of brushes aside his counselor. And I kind of wonder, shouldn't she be like, no, you know what? You need to like talk with me for like a week now. And in fact, it is so interesting that she is a ship's counselor. And so rarely is she invoked as someone who can really do real work. And again, I find that to be sort of an echo of the 90s, 80s and 90s, that having a ship's counselor is a great idea, but never used to its fullest potential, was it? She was just sort of there to kind of be like, oh, I can read minds. I can read feelings. Not to skip too far ahead, but watching Emergence, or not Emergence, but Phantasms, is that the one? The one where Data has a dream. And he's trying to interpret it, and instead of going to Deanna, he creates Sigmund Freud on the holodeck and speaks to him. And then later on he goes and talks to her, and she's like, you know what, maybe you shouldn't freaking talk to a hologram, talk to me, because that's my job. And then later on she brings a cake of him and cuts him in half, so maybe she's not great. Let's skip over to this. This is just kind of like a best of. Right around here.
Captain, the Borg is still unconscious.
He suffered massive internal injuries. We've been able to control the hemorrhaging, but some of the implants in his brain were damaged. I may have to remove them.
The Borg will die if they're removed permanently. Their brains grow dependent on the biochips.
Perhaps Geordi can construct some new implants.
They contain relatively straightforward programming, interface protocols. We have the files we downloaded after your experience, Captain. I think I can manage it.
Miss LaForge, do you know enough about Borg programming to alter the pathways to their root command structure?
I'm not sure, sir. Subroutines are pretty complicated. I'd probably have to study the data processing algorithms. It's the only way I could trace the access codes.
If we could get to the root command, we could introduce an invasive programming sequence through its biochip system.
All right, so I want to play that because, as I said before, I had a lot of negative views about this. And one of them was the simplicity in which the character of Hugh was played. I found him to be very much, and let's just say this right now, very much in the vein of Edward Scissorhands, a film which came out in 1990, directed by Tim Burton, starred Johnny Depp. A fun film, and but a sort of a character who's dressed all in leather, who has weird appendages, and is unfamiliar with our world and is slowly brought up into it and you know, learns how to survive and then does something sort of bad and then has to go away or whatever it was. I can't remember what it was. And so when I saw this at first, I was like, they're just doing Edward Scissorhands. And you know what? I think they probably are just doing Edward Scissorhands. And one of my problems was, is like, is this how the Borg are? Are they just a bunch of dummies running around? Are they just like, what is that? I don't like that. What are you doing? And all these years, after 28 years, I had forgotten about this little swatch of dialogue, which does two things. First of all, it clears the way for this sort of idiot savant character of Hugh to... It gives us permission to have him not be super smart, to have him sort of be a little slow on the uptake. You know, what is friend? You know, where later on we'll see other iterations of the Borg, even when they're separated, not, you know, have difficulty putting together like subject and object kind of situation, subject and verb agreements. So that, like, for the first time, I'm like, oh, so this, I guess I can give them a pass at that. And the second thing this does is, as they're talking about how we will be simplifying this character, we see that Picard is looking for a deeper, more insidious objective, which is to destroy the Borg. And you can see it in his face. He sees an opportunity. He sees the instrument of his torture, and he sees an opportunity to get revenge. So, interesting kind of juxtaposition of those two. All right, now let's go over to this. So, let's just listen to this.
Question. What exactly is total systems failure?
The Borg are extremely computer dependent. A system's failure will destroy them.
I just think we should be clear about that. We're talking about annihilating an entire race.
Which under most circumstances would be unconscionable. But as I see it, the Borg leave us with little choice.
I agree. We're at war.
There's been no formal declaration of war.
Not from us, but certainly from them. They've attacked us at every encounter.
They've declared war on our way of life. We're to be assimilated.
But even in war, there are rules. You don't kill civilians indiscriminately.
There are no civilians among the Borg.
Think of them as a single collective being. There's no one Borg who is more an individual than your arm or your leg.
How convenient.
Your point, Doctor.
When I look at my patient, I don't see a collective consciousness. I don't see a hive. I see a living, breathing boy who has been hurt and who needs our help. And we're talking about sending him back to his people as an instrument of destruction.
It comes down to this. We're faced with an enemy who are determined to destroy us, and we have no hope of negotiating a peace. Unless that changes, we are justified in doing anything we can to survive.
Security to Captain.
Got here.
All right, so let's break this down here a little bit. Let's talk about this. Let me see if I can actually find this over here, too. Everybody is pretty much right on this. I mean, this is an interesting moral dilemma, an interesting moral, you know, quandary that the characters are in the respect that, yes, we've got to, I mean, we have a Borg, and we should probably kill it, and or find a way to destroy all the Borg. And everybody's right about this. And then Beverly, as I said, she's just got like the wind to her back on this, and she is really pushing this narrative of, I don't want to be the person to kill this race. Everyone else's points are really, really valid, though. And that's... I remember when I was thinking about it back in 1992, I'm like, yeah, Beverly, what the hell are you talking about? These guys are going to wipe out humanity. And in some ways, her argument falls apart because the Borg, especially at this stage, are not a species necessarily, you know, which evolved in a certain way. They're more of a force of nature. You don't negotiate with a hurricane. And even closer to that, they're zombies. They're zombies that adapt. And, you know, say what you will about The Walking Dead, but the one thing they've never done, is to create a smart zombie that's like, wait a minute, don't kill us. Which is exactly what's going to happen here in a minute. But Picard knows exactly what the Borg want. Because he was one, right? I mean, it's kind of strange for Beverly to be calling this out and having some sort of moral high ground saying, well, you know, there was never a formal declaration of war. We don't know what their intent is. And Picard's like, yes, I do. They captured me, and I knew their intent. We were going to enslave all of humanity and remove all your individuality, and here you're talking about this one Borg. She has a moral high ground that is difficult to in this day and age, to sort of, at least in that moment, difficult to defend. All right, so I've been stalling here a little bit because I want to play this one little segment here from... Oh, do you hear that? Listen to that. That's BSG, isn't it? Let's see if I can find this part.
So that's what we're about now.
No hope of being rescued. Tells me all I need to know. And once the virus is in the resurrection ship, there'll be no stopping it.
Now, I want you to listen to the conversation we heard earlier, and then I want you to juxtapose this with Battlestar Galactica. This is Season 3, Episode 7, A Measure of Salvation, where the Battlestar Galactica people have discovered that there's a virus on board one of the Cylon ships, and if they release it into these resurrection ships, it will kill all the Cylons, and here they are debating it.
Rescuers become carriers of the plague. Cylons themselves don't believe that they'll develop a cure.
Oh my God. This could be the end of the Cylons entirely.
Forever.
Genocide?
So that's what we're about now.
They're not human. They were built. Not born. No fathers, no mothers, no sons, no daughters.
I had a daughter. I held her in my arms.
And she was half human. These are things, dangerous things. This is our one chance to be rid of them.
You can rationalize it any way you want. We do this, we wipe out their race, then we're no different than they are.
Captain, I respectfully disagree.
Wow, a lot of similarities, right? And it probably shouldn't be too much of a surprise, since Battlestar Galactica was written by Ronald D. Moore, who was on TNG and Deep Space Nine, Voyager, and saw all of this. Now, the interesting thing about this is that in both instances, they don't release the virus. They don't release the four-dimensional pictograph, which I always thought was a little bit of a cop-out. I mean, I could understand TNG, because if you wipe out the Borg, then it's like, oh well. But Battlestar Galactica was a serialized show which always pushed things to the limit. And at the end of this episode, as a spoiler, I will tell you that someone kills all the Cylons on board the ship so they can't infect the rest of the Cylons, and oh well, what are you going to do? And it's just interesting to hear those parallels, especially when I always thought that the two problems I have with Iborg is the fact that they humanize one of the greatest villains of Star Trek, and two, that they have an opportunity to wipe out the greatest villain of all time on Star Trek, and they don't. And I wonder if that burned in Ronald Moore's head, and he said, I'm gonna set up these exact same circumstances again, and then repeat that, where we don't do it. So it's an interesting parallel, and I don't think it's coincidental. And the fact that the outcomes are the same is very fascinating to me. All right, let's move on. So, let's do a little bit of fencing, shall we? Let's get here. So, after the Borg is on the ship, Picard decides to fence with Guinan, because fencing is fun. And then they have this little conversation here. Guinan is sort of an ally with Picard. She is also very much not on board with having the Borg on board. And as they are fencing, she keeps on saying, "What? Why are you having him here?" And he says, "I believe there's an opportunity here." And I think one of the things was is that he's pretty defenseless. So they spar a second time. And then this happens. She pokes him.
You all right?
And she stabs him.
You felt sorry for me. Look what it got you.
All right, so maybe I should have set that up a little more. They were sword fighting for a little while, and then they sword fought again, and then Gaiden faked an injury, and then as Picard lowered his guard, boy, we got a lot on board, Borg on board, she sucker stabbed him to try to make the point that the Borg should not be treated with kindness or compassion or humanity. And this is an interesting take from her, but this is great to see these two here. And I have not seen this scene in a long time where the two of them are just sitting, just hashing it out with a commonality of like, man, we got screwed over by the Borg big time. Nobody knows the Borg like the two of us do on this ship. What this reinforced with me, and again, from 1992 to 2020, I realize how good of an actress Whoopi Goldberg is and was, and I have to spin around some of my beliefs back in 1992 or whenever she showed up, when I was like, Whoopi Goldberg, the comedian, just wants to be on Star Trek. And she did a good job. She always did a good job, quipping and having fun. But this is a really good episode for her. She shines at this. One of the problems about Star Trek Next Generation is that, you have Jean-Luc Picard kind of at the top of the pyramid, and really no one can talk a lot of sense into him in his crew, because he always has the highest moral ground, basically. In the original series, you had Kirk, and then you had McCoy and Spock, who would always chip away at him with logic and compassion. He'd have to kind of split between the two. But Picard is the negotiator, and so he always has the strongest moral center to this. But when that's taken away, as in this episode and in First Contact, who amongst them is strong enough to take him down? I mean, Beverly slows him down in both this and in the movie, and Deanna is sort of useless. He just brushes her aside. And so in this, we have Whoopi Goldberg, and in First Contact, it's Alfred Woodard, these people who have been through stuff and can go through it with him and say, you need to take another look at this. And the interesting thing about this is that Guinan has to go on this journey before he does. She has to talk to Hugh before he does. And to come around, because Picard is our hero, but she is on equal footing with him. And she's the one who can say, you might have this wrong. Let's listen to the christening of Hugh here. Let's figure out how this guy got his name, huh?
Before that happens, could we ask you a few questions?
We will answer.
Terrific. All right, hang on just a second here, 35.
What is your designation?
Designation?
Third of five.
You mean our names? We don't have designations. We have names. I'm Beverly. This is Geordi.
Do I have a name?
Do you want one?
A name?
I'm Beverly. He's Geordi. And you?
You.
You...
No, wait a minute. That's it. Hugh. What do you think?
You.
No, not you. Hugh.
Hugh.
Okay, now, I'm Beverly.
I'm Geordi.
We are Hugh.
And I'm Mike, and this has been Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. Oh, I don't like this part. I'm sorry. If you like this, if you find this endearing and cute and cloyingly wonderful, good for you. I appreciate your opinion on this, but it's wrong. It's wrong. The Borg are totally made toothless in these scenes here. They are totally made cute and adorable and Baby Yoda, and don't you just want to hug and cuddle him? He's an attractive young man, and he talks like a little bit like a baby. I do not understand. What is my name? What are you? You are a doctor? I don't get it. And it's this broken English sort of, isn't that? Aren't I the cutest thing? No, you're the Borg! You're the Borg! You assimilated thousands of races! You destroyed the Starfleet, 39 ships and 11,000 people. 39 ships, 11,000, I got that, I'm sorry. You have done all of this. This is not cute. You know, Nazis aren't cute. Although I guess maybe Jojo Rabbit's supposed to be pretty good, so maybe I'll go see that. So it is this humanizing of this huge threat to the Federation, which so irked me. And, you know, maybe if it was done with like a fat guy in his 60s or a woman who like had an eye patch or something, that would be fine. But this is so calculated to be adorable that it just turned me off. It just made it into an E.T. kind of Yoda-ish kind of thing. And I just was not a fan of it. So there it is. That scene really, really bugged me. And as you can tell, it still bugs me a little bit. Here's something else which I was always kind of like, really? Even though when I hear the explanation, it's not the worst anymore. It's right around. This is when, after they do diagnostics on Hugh, Geordi and Data propose how to stop the Borg.
How can a geometric form disable a computer system?
The shape is a paradox, sir. It cannot exist in real time or space.
When Hugh's imaging apparatus imprints this on his biochips, he'll try to analyze it.
He will be unsuccessful and will store the shape in his memory banks. It will be shunted to a subroutine for further analysis.
And when the Borg download his memory, it'll be incorporated into their network, then they'll try to analyze it.
It is designed so that each step they take will spawn an anomalous solution. The anomalies are designed to interact with each other, linking together to form an endless and unsolvable puzzle.
Quite original. How long before a total systems failure?
Not until the shape has gone through several hundred computational cycles.
When can you begin the process?
About another 20 hours.
Okay, so basically they're going to show him like a weird like 3D art picture. Remember the one you crossed your eyes like in the 80s and 90s and you saw like a picture? They're going to show him some 3D art, and what's going to happen is he's not going to be able to figure out, it's like, oh, is that a rabbit or is it a cow? I don't know. I'll store that away. And then every time they share it, they can't figure it out, and they store it again. And each little bit of it, like each little anomalous bit, turns into a program which will eventually shut them all down. This is such a bonkers, weird, it is such a stretch that you can show a Borg a picture and it will destroy the entire Borg fleet. Now, at this point in time, we don't know how big the Borg are, but, I mean, certainly there seems to be lots of them, right? I mean, if they've taken over whole species and there's one cube, you know, the commonality of that shape kind of implies that it's one of many, and especially if he's 3 of 5, and hey, we want to get you know, Picard to speak for this species. It seemed like there's a lot. So the idea that you can just basically send this one picture and destroy every single Borg, a species which is designed to adapt, is a little bit of a stretch. Now, for sure, in The Best of Both Worlds Part 2, they put them to sleep, which was also what I think it was Riker's, like, you put them to sleep. Even more ridiculous in some ways. They just kind of like hit the reset button and they all blew up. And this is like, I don't know if you remember when a couple of years ago, the iPhones, you could send a certain character or set of characters to the iPhone and totally lock it up. Great. Yes. But you won't stop all of them. And eventually, those iPhones got rebooted and fixed. So this was a very convenient, long-winded, interesting way of saying we can stop them and giving Picard this option, this kill switch on his greatest enemy. So I didn't like it then. I'm not a huge fan of it now, but I always understood the moral conundrum they're placing him in. All right, so from there we go to... So, in between, everyone is slowly being swayed by this. First, it's Beverly and Geordi, and then Geordi talks to Guinan. In some ways, it is Hugh who is the four-dimensional image which keeps on nesting in people's minds and eliciting compassion from people, doesn't it? I mean, with each iteration, he meets someone and he charms them so much that they pass on to the next people. Like Beverly was charmed by him, and then Geordi, and then Geordi passed on to Guinan, and Guinan's passing on to Picard. So Guinan goes into Picard when he's like getting ready to drink some scotch and read some Shakespeare or something like that. And he's in his weird little jammies and says, you got to talk to him. And Picard's surprised about it. It's like, oh my God, how can you change? Like, just talk to him. So they finally beam Hugh into the ready room where Picard has this cool, scary little sequence here where he talks to him. It's a long sequence, but let's just cut to the quick here.
He would rather die than be assimilated.
Then he will die.
No. Geordi must not die. Geordi is a friend.
You will assist us to assimilate this vessel. You are Borg. You will assist us.
I will not.
What did you say?
I will not assist you.
I?
Geordi must not be assimilated.
But you are Borg.
No. I am Hugh.
So this was an interesting, cool scene when I saw it because Picard suddenly snaps into a Locutus-like character and demands that Hugh help him take over the ship. And maybe they could do it. I don't know. Certainly in First Contact, you only need a couple of them and they could like inject nanoprobes and all sort of stuff. And he has this long debate with Hugh saying, hey, this is what we do. This is who we are. And finally, Hugh says, no, I do not want to. I, Borg, I, Hugh, do not want to. Which is theoretically the first time he said it, although he said I earlier, I guess, and they didn't catch it when they edited it. And this is what turns around Picard to understand that this Borg now has individuality and that perhaps there is a chance to turn these robots around to not kill humans. It's a good scene. Like I said, when I saw it, we all remember, at least I remember, at the end of The Best of Both Worlds, part two, as at the very end, as Picard is staring out there with his cup of tea of Earl Grey and the saucer, and he lifts it up to drink, and he stops, and they play the kind of da, 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 like the Borg music, and it's like he can't physically drink the tea. And then he sets it down on the table and he stares out. And like nobody knows what that means. Is he still infected? Is there something, some residual trace left over? It was such an interesting, tiny moment, kind of akin to Conspiracy when the message was beamed back at the end of the episode, you know, to who knows where. It never got anywhere because those little crabs, little crabs never came back. So this was an interesting sort of, is he or isn't he Locutus anymore? But in fact, what it was is he was just sort of role-playing to try to bait this third of five out into saying, oh yeah, let's go ahead, let's assimilate it. And they said, ah, I got you, you're actually bad. But instead, the tables get turned on Picard, and he realizes, you know what, maybe I've been wrong about this. And so they have another debate at the Ready Room, and they decide what they should do. Should they return him? His mind will be wiped. Or should they wipe his mind? You know, like when you're selling an Apple phone, you always wipe the hard drive, right? And then put it where you found it. And eventually decide to return him as is. And perhaps for those brief moments, Hugh's new individuality will infect the Borg even more than a strange four-dimensional Rubik's Cube thing. So they give Hugh the option of going back or staying, if he wants to, even though staying will endanger the Federation and Geordi, and he's just, he is head over heels for Geordi. He's like a little puppy dog for Geordi. Geordi will be hurt. Geordi will be hurt. I wish my brother Geordi was here. But eventually, he has enough cognitive abilities to realize that he's putting the ship in danger. So he goes back, and they say goodbye to him. Picard says goodbye to him on the pad, on the transporter pad, and we have this nice little interesting final little exchange.
Accompany him.
Geordi gets to go down with him. We'll step on the pad.
Goodbye.
Captain, I do not want to forget that I am Hugh.
Energize.
You can't see that in a podcast, but Picard's got a little smile. He takes a breath. Tiniest nod, then says energize. Doesn't need to answer necessarily. He has made this wonderful character arc where he is like, you know, I have misjudged the Borg. There is hope for them. There's potential for them. And all of my hatred for them has just bottled up inside of me and made me less of a human than I need to be. And it's a wonderful learning lesson. Until first contact, when he forgets it all and then turns into a crazy person. But it is that moment where he has come to his senses and said, you know what? I can be better than this. I can be a human being when dealing with these creatures. If you are following along on this, following along at home, you might kind of get to the realization that I've got to, that 28 years later, perhaps I was too harsh on this. When I saw Q-Who and then The Best of Both Worlds, it rocked my world. It was so exciting. It was such an exciting change for Star Trek, and not knowing what was going to happen during that summer and coming back for season 4 to watch them vanquish the Borg by putting them to sleep. Not the best resolution, but still, it was so exciting. The Borg were so cool. And the Borg are really, really cool. And then they come out with this. And as I said, the first thing I said is, you ruined it. You ruined it because you humanized these guys. And the thing that I liked about them is that they were this relentless force of nature, these smart zombies that would keep on coming and never ever stop unless you put them in a cell and mess around with their brain, and then suddenly they become like nice little puppy dogs. I had problems that night, and so I disparaged the entire episode. I hated it. I hated the Edward Scissorhands-ish of it. But I've watched it recently, actually today, a couple of times. And I'm willing to reconsider. As Picard was, as Guinan was, I can look back now, and I think there was a review in the AV Club that said, you know, the Borg were already beaten, you know, by going to sleep, so we've already kind of emasculated them a little bit. Where are you going to take them? Every time the Borg show up, if they're the most horrible threat to the Federation, then where do you go from there? How do you either escalate them or de-escalate them? Yeah, you have to change them around. You have to see a different facet of them. And this was. I don't think it's perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but I don't hate it like I did. I don't hate the guy playing it. I don't hate the character Hugh so much. Now, we're going to see him again, aren't we? We're going to see him in Descent Part 2, I believe, where he shows back up with the Borg pirates. And that's terrible. That's just a terrible... That is exactly where we did not want the Borg to go, which is this kind of like messy, angry, half-robot, half-humans who have the worst of both worlds. You know, they don't have the ingenuity of humanity, and they don't have the technological coldness and logic of robots. They're just a bunch of goofballs being led around by lore. And we saw the iteration pretty much once and then never again. But this episode did open up a bevy of possibilities for the Borg. We have Descent. We also have the Queen in First Contact, which Hugh never mentioned. Man, he was holding out, right? Picard held out too, but he forgot. He forgot about the Queen. We have Unimatrix 1. We have, of course, Hugh set the stage for 7 of 9. And it's we should point out that I think it was yesterday, the day before, was the 25th anniversary of Voyager starting. A show which I have a lot of mixed feelings about. You know, I watched the first three or four seasons and I kind of tailed off. But it definitely deserves a relook. And here, 28 years later, I've taken another look at this because if the Borg were just this force of nature, we wouldn't get a lot of those cool storylines with Seven of Nine or with First Contact. And we wouldn't get, you know, this, what should be an interesting, oh, let's also remember that the Nero ship in Star Trek 2009 is using Borg technology, allegedly. We wouldn't get so many rich secondary and tertiary stories from the Borg. So I can be Picard on this, and I can say, okay, you know what? Maybe I was a little wrong on that. Not a lot wrong, but a little wrong. So anyway, that's our podcast. That's what I got here on iBorg. I spent almost exactly the same amount of time that the episode took, and that's okay. But I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you check out our Facebook page. All sorts of fun stuff. Lots of interesting discussions back and forth. We talked about Children of Mars. Gosh, we talked about something else. And I invite you to come on when I post this podcast to weigh in on what you thought of iBorg and what your hopes and aspirations are for Picard and what you thought 2019's biggest Star Trek story was. But for now, I am one of one. I am Mike McCafferty, and I just want to talk about Star Trek. Geordi, will you talk about Star Trek with me?